Polani Kwala on 702.
For the curious.
Live.
Online.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
DSTV.
And 92.7.
And 106 FM.
It is 8:30 after 12. Good afternoon and a warm welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Polani Kwala show here on 702 and Cape Talk. We're live for you from Johannesburg. Well, coming up on the show, of course, all you need to know. The latest in as far as stories are concerned. So you would have heard in Eyewitness News a short while ago, High Court in Pretoria granting the Prudential Authority's application to liquidate the VBS Mutual Bank. We'll get our reporter on the story. Now, the application follows Advocate Terry Mutau's finding of widespread looting at the bank and his recommendation that it should be wound up because it simply cannot be rescued. But here's a confusing part, I suppose. According to the story, Advocate Vincent Maleka told the court today that the Prudential Authority's application to liquidate the bank was not being opposed. I looked at this and I thought, well, there are opposition parties such as the EFF who publicly have said that they are opposed to the liquidation of the bank. Why not take advantage of this High Court process then and make your voice heard? Why were they not there, those who are opposed to the liquidation of the bank? Or were they just making empty political rhetoric? And not wanting to follow it up. What's the story here? We have put a call through to the EFF. Hopefully they'll be back to respond before it is 1 o'clock. But also I'll tell you what the Reserve Bank is saying. We asked them for a response to what has happened. I will tell you what they are saying. They sent us just a very short statement on WhatsApp. All right then, if you have your own reaction to this and any other story that we'll cover on the program, let me remind you of our lines here. You can give me a call on 011-883-0702 if you're in Johannesburg or up here in Gauteng. But also in the Western Cape, you can give us a call on 021-446-0567. It's 021-446-0567. I like hearing from you on WhatsApp. If you give me just a short and sharp voice note on WhatsApp, here's the number, 072-702-1702. It's 10:30 after 12.
The Polani Kwala Show.
The other story happening right now, the Right to Know campaign is at this hour launching an urgent court application at the South Gauteng High Court. They want an order that will force President Cyril Ramaphosa to open for the public interviews for the permanent head of the National Prosecuting Authority. So they want these interviews to be accessible to members of the public, including by live broadcast. What do you think of that, eh? Is it something that you would go to court for? Is it something worth fighting for, that these interviews of whoever is going to be the head of the National Prosecuting Authorities must be live on TV and that members of the public must have access to this? There have been letters written both to and from the president. So what happened was the Right to Know campaign wrote a letter demanding this from the president, and the president responded saying the Constitution says that he has the right to appoint the head of the National NDP, the head of the National Prosecuting Authority, and that it doesn't say how he should do that. But on the other hand, the Right to Know campaign is arguing that the Constitution says government must be very transparent about these kinds of appointments. So we'll hear from the Right to Know campaign about this issue. But again, would you go to court for this? Is it something worth going to court for, fighting for the live broadcast of these interviews? Give me a call. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567.
Polani Kwala
on 702 and Cape Talk.
Lots of other stories. I see that Johannesburg Water has been commenting on how to use water. I'll tell you about that a little later on. But also, I'll tell you about something very big here on the program. On Thursday, we have a town hall discussion on cancer. It's a follow-up on some of the stories, but I'll give you the information a little later on. It's something that a lot of you have been writing to us about. It's a follow-up that we mentioned, and I'll give you the details coming up a little later on, 12 after 12.
Polani Kwala
on 702 and Cape Talk.
All right. First, of course, we start with a breaking story around the High Court in Pretoria that has granted the Prudential Authority's application to liquidate the VBS Mutual Bank. Barry Bateman is monitoring that story as it develops and is on the line now to give us the latest. Barry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Polani.
Thank you very much. So tell us about the ruling of the High Court in Pretoria.
Well, it was really an in-and-out affair because there was no opposition to this particular application. So Advocate Vincent Baleka for the Prudential Authority, which falls within the South African Reserve Bank, telling the court that there's no opposition to this. There was a brief submission, and within minutes, the judge had handed down the draft order, which has brought about the wounding up and the closure of the VBS Mutual Bank. It now moves for a liquidator to be appointed. But the thrust of the argument from the Prudential Authority is that, and this was also based on the findings of Terry Motau SC's investigation, damning investigation into the looting of the bank, but essentially the bank is unable to pay its debts and is commercially insolvent, and that it is further factually insolvent in that its liabilities exceed its assets. The investigation further found that there is no reasonable possibility that a continuation of the curatorship, you'll recall that the bank was under curatorship since March, that the continuation of the curatorship will enable VBS to pay its debts, meet its obligations, and become a successful concern. So it was pretty much all over for the bank. There was no possible way to turn this around, and the Prudential Authority went and had it liquidated.
In a matter of minutes, hey, VBS closed. That's it. That's the end of it.
That's the end of it. There was no opposition to this. But I think the next phase, which is very, I think, perhaps more important, Kolani, what's going to be able to happen now is that a liquidator is going to be appointed. And it had to wind up all its interests and so on. But what it can do is that it can initiate the legal mechanisms to start recovering funds from recipients where transactions were found to be void or impeachable. Now, the big Terry Motau's investigation had found how a lot of the payments, well, not a lot, we took 2 billion rands worth of money that left this bank, was unlawfully done. Dozens of people unlawfully benefited from this bank and the looting in this particular bank. We can now start the process through the legal mechanisms to start recovering whatever money is still available from those people who had benefited. Now, this will obviously be aside from ever whatever criminal prosecution which would come from this, which includes fraud, corruption, money laundering, or whatever it might be. This would be the civil mechanism that can be put in place to try and get some of those funds back.
Fantastic. All right, Barry Bateman, listen, thank you very much. Much appreciated. Barry Bateman working that story and, of course, talking about what needs to happen next. So what we're going to do is, whilst trying to get reaction from political parties, but also just get a view around what happens then going forward after this. There's a very interesting, I got an email from the SA Institute of Professional Accountants. They are talking about these issues of liquidation. What does it mean? And why are we here? What happens going forward? So we'll get Faith Ngwenya to talk to us about that. She is with the South African Institute of Professional Accountants. But interesting questions on SMS. For instance, there's this one not signed, unfortunately. It says, I wonder if Zuma is still paying off his loan to VBS Fongandla. And what will happen now, now that the court has granted the liquidation of this bank? And that's a very interesting question. Faith Ngwenya, perhaps we'll try and answer that question for you coming up next. It's 16 after 12.
702. Kolani Gwala, 12 to 1.
All right, we'll go to Faith Ngwenya as soon as we are able to. In fact, I believe that she is on the line to talk to us about this. Faith, a very good afternoon to you, and I thank you for your time.
Good afternoon, Kolani.
Thanks indeed. All right, so Faith, I mean, of course, you were talking in your email about a lot of things, and I'm going to come back to your email now, but I just want to quickly talk to you about the decision of the High Court in Pretoria that has granted the Prudential Authority's application to liquidate the VBS Mutual Bank. In everyday language, simple person's language, what does this mean, that the bank has been liquidated?
Okay, what it actually means is that it will stop operating, and all the affairs of the bank will now be under a curator who will be appointed by the court, and the curator will then look into, remember that there was from Motau's report that there were the alleged people that are involved in embezzling funds. So they will look into all of that and see how much can be collected from those that are guilty of misappropriation, and also any of the debts that are owed to the bank. So the curator will actually be working towards collecting as much as possible. And then the next step is realizing the assets, which means that they will sell all the assets that the bank has and then try and refund the investors, the creditors of the bank, who will be, in this case, the investors.
Sure. All right. Let me just go back to your email then. Your email was more about businesses opting for business rescue as opposed to going straight for liquidation. Is that happening a lot? Do you find a lot of businesses choose business rescue as opposed to just, stop wasting shareholders' time and going straight for liquidation?
The applications are quite a number, applications for business rescue. But not all of them obviously will be granted the right to go to business rescue, because before the order to go into business rescue is made, there has to be a plan, a convincing plan that the entity can still be turned around. So if there are no grounds for the entity or no prospects for the entity to be turned around, then it has to go for liquidation. And as you have rightly pointed out, that otherwise it's just a waste for the shareholders. And in that process, if there are no prospects for it being successful, then you might find that you have even lost more than you would have if you had not even initiated the business rescue.
So in this particular case, the VBS Mutual Bank case, you've had a lot of people, including people who may have been part of the executive of the bank and others, political parties, saying that the bank must still be saved. What are the considerations that the court make before deciding whether to liquidate or save the bank?
It looks at, as I've indicated, the prospect of whether it will actually put it back onto a profitable stance once they have implemented whatever the business rescue practitioner has proposed. But it looks like with VBS, they didn't even look into business rescue. It means that the organization is already beyond a rescue point, which means that if they had initiated business rescue, it will just delay the obvious, which is the liquidation, and in the process might even lose more assets than what they currently have.
All right.
It is a good decision if obviously there are no prospects for it being revised. And the fact that it was unopposed, it means that there is just no prospect for it being a successful rescue.
All right. Faith Ngwenyama, thank you for your time. Technical and standards executive looking at these issues with us. Of course, she's with the South African Institute of Professional Accountants. I mentioned that we spoke to the South African Reserve Bank and wanted to get their reaction to the court's decision here. And they said they're not doing interviews on the judgment. The SARB welcomes the decision and will continue to work with the curator to make sure that as much money as possible can be recovered on behalf of the depositors. That's a short statement that they sent through a little earlier on. I'd be happy to hear your reaction. I see some SMSs coming through at 31702. For instance, somebody says, Xolani, the ANC must bail out VBS Bank. It was looted by the ANC and other organizations. They must bail it out without using tax money. The organizations who looted the bank have money to save the bank. So that's the view coming through on SMS. Again, if you have your own view on it, give me a call or send me a quick WhatsApp voice note.
Xolani Gwala on 702.
For the curious.
It is 24 minutes after 12. Well, former Public Enterprises Minister Barbara Hogan back at the State Capture Inquiry today, second day today. You remember yesterday she spoke a lot about how former President Jacob Zuma interfered with the appointments, particularly of the heads of state-owned companies. Today, a number of issues coming through from her testimony, including how she was fired by former President Jacob Zuma, but also issues of the resignation of Jacob Maruha at Eskom. Let's talk to Clement Manyatela, who is monitoring the testimony by Barbara Hogan. Clement, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, XG.
Thanks indeed. Well, before maybe we get to what Barbara Hogan has told the commission today, the one announcement that was made by the commission is that Pravin Gordhan will no longer be testifying this Thursday.
Yes, so the expectation was that he will take the stand on Thursday, as soon as Barbara Hogan finishes with her testimony, and the Deputy Chief Justice informing the Commission today that he actually received an application from Pravin Gordhan last week Friday to postpone his testimony to next week Monday. We haven't been given reasons why Pravin Gordhan wanted to shift his testimony to next week. But, I mean, we know that he's been subpoenaed by Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane to appear before her tomorrow. We don't know if perhaps he expects that the proceedings with the Public Protector would go on for the next 2 or 3 days, taking much of this week and affecting, of course, his appearance here at the State Capture Commission. But it is, as it stands now, he will be coming through next week, Monday and Tuesday. He's made up himself available for those days, but we still don't know yet what the official reason for the shifting of these dates is.
Sure. All right, let's come back to Barbara Hogan then, who's on the stand. I mentioned earlier on that part of what she spoke about was how she was fired by former President Jacob Zuma. I think it was 18 months after her appointment as Public Enterprises Minister.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, this flows nicely from what she was explaining to the commission yesterday about the kind of interference that came not only from former President Jacob Zuma, but from other people from, you know, outside of the African National Congress. You know, she spoke a lot about senior ANC leaders like Jeff Khadebe, who were part of those that were putting pressure on her to appoint Siyabonga Gama as Transnet CEO at the time when he was in fact facing a disciplinary hearing. She's telling the commission today that, you know, she sort of knew when she got a call from someone from the presidency who said that former President Jacob Zuma wanted to meet with her. And, you know, she says she knew from then on that, in fact, you know, she would be fired from her post based on, of course, the kind of interactions that she had with the president. You know, she stood her ground. She didn't take instructions from the president, then president, to appoint Siyabonga Gama, because she knew that that would be very problematic given that he was facing a disciplinary hearing. So she says she went into that meeting very prepared. And when she got there, in fact, she was accompanied by her partner, you know, struggle stalwart, the late struggle stalwart, Ahmad Katrada. And, you know, she says before she was even allowed to get gain access at the presidential guest house, Ahmad Katrada was not allowed in. Mm. In fact, he was left in the car. XG, because the reasoning that they were given was that Ahmad Katrada was not invited to this meeting, and it was only Barbara Hogan, his partner, that was invited, and as a result, he couldn't be allowed access into the presidential guest house, so he was left in the car. And Barbara Hogan was explaining that the reason that Mr. Katrada wanted to come with her was to sort of offer, you know, his support. He didn't want to be part of that meeting, but he was just coming with her to offer, you know, just that support, knowing very well how stressful and pressured Barbara Hogan had been over the couple of months. So in that meeting, Gwede Mantashe was there, we understand. And, you know, she was basically told that the NEC has decided to redeploy her to Finland to represent South Africa as an ambassador there. She says she declined that offer because she felt that, you know, Ahmad Katrada had spent most of his time alone because of her ministerial duties, and it would be problematic for her to then take a post in Finland. So no reason was given whatsoever for her removal, but she says she knew that it had something to do with her standing her ground and not taking instructions that were very problematic and very illegal coming from former President Jacob Zuma.
Mm. Just quickly, speaking of instructions, she also spoke about how angry former President Jacob Zuma was when he heard the Eskom board's decision on Jacob Marocha.
Yes, so Jacob Marocha, the board deciding that he must be dismissed because they were not happy with his performance. And Barbara Hogan then, you know, sort of had a meeting with the former Eskom CEO and said, you know, this is what the board is deciding on. And the former Eskom CEO actually agreed that he would actually tender his resignation, but then changed tune because former President Jacob Zuma was now interfering in this matter again. We understand from Barbara Hogan that there was a time when she received a call from the former president. And, you know, she spoke in detail about how when she answered that call, the president said, "What do you think you're doing? Stop whatever you're doing. Tell the board to stop whatever they're doing." And, of course, there was an instruction to tell the board to reverse their decision to dismiss or even accept the resignation of the former Eskom, the Eskom CEO. So that this is another interference by the former president. Yesterday we heard about how he wanted nobody else but Siyabonga Gama to be appointed at Transnet. So Barbara Hogan went into detail about how, again, she stood her ground and said, this is not my decision. The board has decided that Eskom is facing serious financial problems. And as a result, they feel that the former Eskom CEO is not performing properly, and therefore that's why they've taken this decision to accept the resignation, and if he's not resigning, to take a decision that he must be dismissed. She even went to detail to explain how when the former president Jacob Zuma was outside of the country, she actually consulted with Kgalema Motlanthe, who was deputy at the time and perhaps also acting president because of the absence of former President Jacob Zuma. And Mr. Motlanthe, told her that, listen, do what you have to do as a minister. Here's a recommendation from the board. Do what you have to do. I don't want to interfere. And she says that's why then she decided that she would go ahead with this decision by the board and tell the board to continue with either the acceptance of Mr. Maroga's resignation or even take a decision to dismiss dismiss him. But when the president returned to the country, then it was very problematic. It caused a lot of confusion. The president called her and said, I have given Mr. The former Eskom CEO the permission to go back to work. So that's where really the testimony is at right now, HG. As I go back in, we'll be finding out the details of what happened subsequent to that decision by the former president to call the former Eskom CEO and say go back to work regardless of any whatever decision that the board has taken.
All right. For now, though, I must thank you very much, Clement Manyatela, monitoring the testimony by Barbara Hogan. And that brings us to a little after 12:30.
The Kgolani Gwala Show. Kgolani Gwala Show on 702.
Oh, it is 19 minutes now before 1. Well, still to come here on the show. We'll be talking to Aki Anastasiou. He is attending the 7th annual FNB Franchise Leadership Summit. I want to know from him, how big is franchising here in South Africa and where is the future of franchising, but also some of the challenges that the franchise industry is facing in South Africa today. We'll talk to Aki Anastasiou about that in a moment or two. But also another story that we track for you. Right to Know campaign is in court this afternoon. They want the South Gauteng High Court to force President Cyril Ramaphosa to open interviews for the permanent head of the National Prosecuting Authorities to ask the public and the media. They say these interviews must be accessible to members of the public, including by live broadcast. And I asked earlier on whether do you think it's worth going to court for? And what do you think? I've got a lot of your responses to the decision by the court, the High Court in Pretoria earlier on to grant the liquidation of VBS Mutual Bank. There is somebody who says, afternoon, Bra X. SAA was helped how many times with the amount far more than the 2 billion rand that VBS needs? Why can they not help it for the first time and appoint qualified staff to monitor it? That's from OBA. Another one says, the liquidation industry must be amongst the most corrupt and crooked industries in the country, and they should be investigated, especially their practices. Why would they be among the most crooked and the most corrupt industry? I'd like somebody to back this up. Unfortunately, this person didn't give us their name, nor did they back this very interesting allegation that they are making here up with some more information. Perhaps if you know what's going on in this industry, let us know. Just something I mentioned at the beginning of the show. I spoke about the hashtag Change for Cancer campaign that we launched on this show a couple of weeks ago. You may remember it. For an hour, we had experts just talking about awareness campaigns relating to cancer, treatment, accessibility, and all of those very important issues. And just a week after that, actually, we were in Pietermaritzburg and we were launching the National Department of Health's awareness campaign. And one of the things that Aaron Motsoaledi, the Minister of Health, said is that cancer is exploding in our faces in this country. So since then, we've been inundated with a lot of SMSs and emails, a lot of people wanting discussions to continue around this and not just have a once-off discussion on the show and move on. So what we're going to do is on Thursday, this coming Thursday, we will have a town hall type discussion where we'll have experts, we will have survivors, we will have people, patients like me, cancer patients still, you know, taking us through their journeys. And if you want to participate, if you want to be part of that, talk about your experiences. Particularly, I'm getting a lot of people complaining about the medical aid industry and cancer and payments for treatment that's not available here, etc., and all of those important things. So if you want to be part of that discussion, send us an email at contact@702.co.za. The show is live this coming Thursday. It'll be 2 hours. In fact, we start at 12 and we finish at 2. 2 hours of wall-to-wall discussions around anything and everything around cancer. We're not just talking about the usual Western kind of treatment. What other alternative treatments are available? What are other people doing surrounding this issue of cancer? So if you want to be part of the discussion, send an email to contact@702.co.za. It is 15 minutes now before 1.
702. Kolani Gwala. Weekdays, 12 to 1.
All right, the 7th annual F&B Franchise Leadership Summit taking place at Monte Cassino today. Entrepreneurs at the summit are engaging with franchise futurists who will help them with the right tools on future-proofing their businesses. Now, our very own Aki Anastasiou is attending the summit and is on the line now to update us on what's going on there. Aki, good afternoon.
Hey, XG, a very good afternoon to you.
Ah, man, thank you very much. How have you found the summit so far?
No, it's been very, very interesting. I tell you, the background is, as you mentioned correctly earlier, it's the 7th one that F&B is running, called the F&B Franchise Leadership Summit. And inside the audience is kind of is the franchisors, the people who own the actual franchises, not the franchisees. We've got landlords over here. We've got people who are directly involved in the franchise industry from supplying products, etc. But it's mostly the people that kind of prop up the industry. And we've got all these kind of experts talking about the future of franchising and how big it's getting and where it's going and what are the dangers and what are the risks that many of these businesses face in a challenging business environment.
Sure. Let's just talk a little bit about those challenges there. What are the key challenges that are coming up?
Well, you know, the interesting one is that people are saying that there's too many shopping centers in the city. You know, you look at what's happening where we are at the moment at Monte Cassino, and there's another massive shopping center, the Four Ways Mall, which is about to be going up. And there's a lot of increased competition. But on the other hand, people are saying, well, the experts here are saying that, look, yes, we are building a lot of shopping centers, but there's capacity and there's demand and there's a lot of urbanization happening. People are moving to the bigger cities. And there's obviously a demand for it, and this is why there are so many shopping centers. But the reality is that competition is growing. And if you look at how this industry is, I mean, there are 45,000 kind of businesses, franchise businesses in the country at the moment. And 2,600 of those were just signed up in the last year. So 2,600 new franchises opened last year. And if you look at the actual differentiation in what kind of franchises they are, you can choose from 865 different franchises in South Africa at the moment. And when you put that in the pot and you realize how big this industry is, Kolani, is that, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry that brings in about 740 billion rand a year when you include, you know, the different spas and shops. And then, you know, you mentioned some of the other challenges that people are facing, you know, that the changing times. And, of course, e-commerce is a big one because here you've got these bricks and mortar stores and e-commerce comes in and it's a challenge. So you've got to reinvent yourself all the time. You've got to think out of the box. You've got to create a different customer experience and you've got to deliver the best to your customer to retain your customer base. So these are some of the challenges that a lot of these franchise owners are talking about at this event.
Fantastic. All right, Aki, listen, thank you. Thank you very much. Aki Anastasiou reporting for us live from Monte Cassino. He's attending the 7th annual F&B Franchise Leadership Summit. You'll be hearing more about this throughout the day on this radio station.
Kolani Gwala on 702.
For the curious.
It is 10 now before 1. So you may have heard this, Amnesty International yesterday announcing that it has withdrawn its highest honor, the Ambassador of Conscience Award, from Aung San Suu Kyi in light of the Myanmar's leader's shameful betrayal of the values she once stood for. So according to the statement by Amnesty International, they said on the 11th of November, Amnesty International Secretary General Kumi Naidu wrote to Aung San Suu Kyi to inform her the organization is revoking the 2009 award. Halfway through her term in office and 8 years after her release from house arrest, Naidu expressed the organization's disappointment that she had not used her political and moral authority to safeguard human rights, justice and equality in Myanmar. But let's talk a little bit more about this. We're on the line now to Shanila Mohammed, Amnesty International South African Executive Director. Shanila, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Kolani, and good afternoon to your listeners.
Thank you very much. All right, it seems like a drastic step you've taken here. What message are you sending out there? Are you humiliating her?
No, Kolani. You know, it's in fact, to be honest with you, we're extremely saddened by the fact that we've had to take this decision, and we do not take this decision lightly. You know, as you rightly said, we bestowed this on her in 2009. At the time, she was under house arrest. She was only able to then receive it in 2012 when she basically came out. And, you know, this is an honor that we bestowed to Madiba, to people like Mary Robinson. So it's not something that we take lightly. But, you know, we have been monitoring the situation. And one of the things I just want to say to you is that when we bestowed the honor on her, one of the things she said to us on that day, she actually requested that Amnesty International, and I quote her, where she says, please do not take either your eyes or your mind off us and help us to be the country where hope and history merges. And Amnesty International took her request very seriously. So we've been monitoring the situation on the ground. We've been reaching out to her every time we had concerns. We've been trying to, you know, influence her to sort of take action, particularly around the Rohingya issue against the military, and we failed. And I think that, you know, our decision was really taken in light of the fact that we no longer feel that she is living up to what the actual award embodies, and we no longer feel as Amnesty that we can be associated with her.
And you do say you've reached out to her, but what has she told you about why she's not taking the kind of steps that you wanted to take around the Rohingya issue? Has she explained it to you?
You know what, in fact, Kolani, on the 5th of November, we joined with 50 human rights organizations around the world, and we wrote a letter to her in which we expressed our massive concerns about the fact that she was not stepping up, and that the closing of space, the arrest of journalists, you know, what is happening with the Rohingya. And, you know, what we get back from there is basically, you know, excuses. She will try to defend the position of the military. She will basically, you know, we've even had situations where her administration has labeled Rohingya as terrorists. They've accused them of burning their own homes. They've accused them of faking rape. You know, and the state media under her has published inflammatory and dehumanizing articles in which they call the Rohingya detestable human fleas, forms which must be called out. And you know, Kolani, in Africa, we have gone through something like this with Rwanda, where, you know, media was calling they were referring to people there as cockroaches. And so, you know, it's not a bad situation, sure. And it's not something that we are happy about.
Okay, Shanila, let me thank you for your time. Shanila Mohammed, Amnesty International South African Executive Director. If you're monitoring that story of what's going on, please let me know. Myanmar's leaders, they've withdrawn. I mean, Amnesty International has now revoked, withdrawn its highest honor, the Ambassador of Conscience Award. What do you think about her and her role heading the civilian part of the government of Myanmar? Has she got the powers to do anything about what's going on there? Or is the military too powerful? Perhaps is she being judged unfairly? What do you think? It's 521.
702. Kolani's on Twitter at KwalaX.
All right, I'll tell you what's going on Twitter, but let me tell you first about the Gauteng provincial Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, they're stepping up efforts to counter climate change with the Climate Change Indaba. The Climate Change Indaba is taking place today at the Velmo Hotel in Pretoria. It will showcase Gauteng government's climate change response efforts, raise public awareness around climate change, and present as well as seek funding for the Gauteng City Region's climate change strategic plans. Simon Gear is at the Climate Change Indaba, and he joins us on the line now. Simon, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Kladadi.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me on. So a lot of it is to do with the province actually initiating what has already been decided at national. So things like if you are a business that has an air emissions license or an atmospheric emissions license, you've already been having to quantify your greenhouse gases. Now Gauteng is talking about maybe putting pressure on you to maybe decrease those. But also there are the sort of decisions that the province can make around increasing public transport and broadening our green spaces, all of those sort of things. So there is a mix between provincial decisions and then implementing national decisions.
Sure. But how serious do you think the Gauteng Provincial Department of Agriculture and Rural Development is around these issues of climate change? Do you get a sense that it's urgent?
I think it is. You know, they provided an interesting stat that Gauteng is expected to increase in temperature by 0.2 degrees per decade going forward, which doesn't sound like much, but it is double the global average. And when you start extrapolating that forward, you realize how much more serious that could be. So I think they do recognize that. And then the other big important issue is that Gauteng is a magnet for people from all of Southern Africa. So when places like Malawi and Zimbabwe and Mozambique get impacted by climate change, those refugees are going to land up in Gauteng. And so even beyond the immediate climate impact of our province itself, we're going to see a broader economic impact that is driven by climate change.
All right, Simon, listen, thank you. Much appreciated. Simon Gear reporting for us from that summit that is looking at climate change and what the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development here in Gauteng is doing around it. All right, so I mentioned earlier on that the Right to Know campaign are in court. Right this minute, they want the court to rule on the interviews for the head of the national ENPA, the National Prosecuting Authority. So Mlulegi Marongo is with the Right to Know campaign. He's in court, actually. I just want to very quickly, Mlulegi, find out if the court has made a ruling here and what is it?
So they've made a ruling on the first point of urgency. So remember, the president wanted this case to be dismissed because he said we self-created the agency. There's nothing urgent here. So the judges just said, no, this is urgent. It must be heard today, right now, actually, because the interviews are tomorrow. So we've won on that procedural aspect. And so after lunch, we will now argue the merits.
Okay, fantastic. Mlulegi Marongo, thank you very much. So that's the developing story then around their demand for these interviews at least to be shown on TV. Mlulegi Marongo, thank you.